Today is February 7, 2018. What is your name?
My name is Frank York.
And where do you live?
I live 7 miles southeast of Ashland, or 3 miles southwest of Sitka.
All right. So what is your occupation?
I have worked for Stockbridge State Bank for 41 and a half years, almost 42, and I'm also farm and ranch out near in eastern, east of Ashland, that is.
Okay. And how old are you?
I am a young 68 and a half years old.
Okay. When did you first become aware of the Starbuck fire, hereafter referred to simply as the fire?
The fire, we started hearing about a fire about 11 o'clock at the bank, and of course, I think that might have come over the Inglewood dispatch, and we were all very concerned because from that area we looked at the flag outside the bank, and the flag was sticking straight out in the same direction, opposite direction of Inglewood, and so... And, of course, we had heard, it really had started south of Inglewood, down in Oklahoma. We were immediately aware of a possibility that this could be bad early on. And at 11:50, local fire siren went off somewhere in that neighborhood right before noon. And, of course, our local fireman, Bill Nyer, took off, and we knew it was bad, or going to get bad anyway.
So Ashland had to evacuate later in the afternoon. What types of things did the bank do to get ready for that evacuation?
Well, we were monitoring it during that whole time. In answer to your question, we had Jay Canton had a pager, so we were listening to the chatter. We had received an email from Sherry Nyer saying she had talked to Bill and just said, it's on the emails I recollect, said, this is really bad, pray for the firemen. And so we knew early on, and I thought about calling Bill, but I knew he wouldn't have time to call, you know, leave the guys alone. But it seemed like maybe he called me and said, Frank, if you know any people in that area that might have a tractor and disc, please call them and tell them we're going to need some help. And I could think of just two or three people down that area that still would have a disc. A lot of people have gone to no-till farming and have sprayers, but I did make a couple calls. So further preparation was at 3 o'clock, we knew it was getting bad because of the smoke cloud coming in to town. You could actually smell it and starting to blot out the sun. At 3 o'clock was our normal closing time. Right. Kendall Kay had gotten a call, who's of course our mayor, and we made the decision we were going to shut everything down and everybody go home. Prior to that, there wasn't a lot of in-house preparation outside of just praying and concern for the firemen and the first responders.
So you have an emergency plan at the bank?
We do. We do that we review every year, usually in the spring. And, of course, a wild prairie fire was probably nothing that anybody had ever prepared for. Our first thought is tornado, not too many floods. our natural disasters, of course, would be windstorms or tornadoes that we kind of have in our scenario and that we practice for and plan for. But a prairie fire was... We had actual experience this year.
Yeah. So do you have off-site place where you keep copies of everything that you have at the bank?
Yes, we do. Yeah. And we go over that and prepare for a different scenario every year. But like I said, I don't believe a prairie fire had been on our list since we...
Not at all.
We started doing this after the Greensburg tornado, and I think most banks across the state, most businesses have some sort of a strategic plan for emergency, of this nature.
So once they let you decided to close, were you still in town when they gave the evacuation order, or had you
actually
already gone
home? Hightailed it for home. My wife Sue was there. She I think I might have called her somewhere in there and say, hey, we're heading out. This thing's looking really serious. Keep an eye out, which she, of course, was. Could see the smoke. The smoke was rolling in. I got home about 3:15 to 3:30, and I no sooner had pulled in my driveway and my cell phone went off that gave the evacuation orders. So we did the, I just kind of played with, well, should we leave or should I stay here and defend the fort, you know? And my thought was...
Did you expect it to get there?
Well, actually, I didn't. But there again, the smoke was blowing still out of the southwest right towards our direction. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to judge at that point, still, you know, pretty much daylight. How you couldn't see flames, of course, but it, as far as I knew, it was, might have been just right over the hill. You know, and as the intensity was growing minute by minute of the smoke. So we decided to do that thing that you always see on TV. If you've got 10 minutes, what are you going to take from the house? We started loading our car, one of our cars, and then I decided, you know, we have a dog. I didn't want the dog in our nice car, so I said, well, we'll take, you drive the car, I'll drive the pickup with our dog Zoe. And then we just kept packing items that you would want to take, you know. I had my tax work on the computer, so I unplugged the computer, took that, you know, photo albums, the things that you normally can't replace, pictures of some artwork that we have and have value to, and you just, Sue had thrown a couple suitcases of clothes together, and you just...
And where did you decide to go?
Originally, we thought we would go over to our to Bev York's and then kind of plan there. We had called Bev to make sure she had, was aware of it. Mm-hmm. And then I believe Sue, I said, suggested we call Eldora McMenemy, which was just outside of south of Sitka there. You know, I think about the time we were trying to deliberate, we got the message to, that said go to Coldwater. And which was probably good because if we'd gone south to Buffalo or something like that, most of those people, you know, got moved out too. So in our transit, we found out that Bev was right behind us as we turned onto the Highway 34 south of Sitka. And of course, as we went by Eldora's house, I pulled in. I could see that she was trying to carry a suitcase out to her car, and I helped her get out of her garage and into her car, and made sure she knew that to follow us or stay close to us. And she told her that everybody was heading to Coldwater. And that's
so. Did you take all your vehicles to Coldwater?
Actually, I left out a part. I suggested that to Sue has her own car. I said maybe we better take this over to Bev's, thinking we were more in the line of the fire than Bev's. And if Sue tells me afterwards, if we'd been thinking, we should have just driven it out into the middle of a wheat field. It would have been fine.
Right.
And after I left, I thought, why didn't I drive my two tractors out in the middle of the wheat field, which would have made sense too. But you can't think of everything, you know. So we got to Coldwater, I would say, about 4:15 or so. And Eldora showed up, and so did Bev. So
did you go to the high school then?
Went directly to the high school. Sue, I think, was low on gas, so she thought, you know, no telling where we might end up tonight. So she stopped and got some gas, and then we camped out at the cafeteria in Coldwater for the rest of the evening.
So on your way over, were you in a line of vehicles going over?
You know, it was traffic, but not heavy traffic at 3:45, I would say, when we actually got away. And it was not, you know, I could look back in my mirror and I could tell it was getting darker. Mm-hmm. And so we felt, for Sue's protection and the dog's protection, I felt I was doing the right thing. I do remember as I left the front of the house, I stopped and I got my cell phone out and I took a picture of the house that had been in our family for 105 years. It's my grandfather's house. My dad was raised there, and I've lived there for 30 some years, not knowing whether I'd ever see the house again.
Right.
At that point, it looked like this looks pretty serious. So I have that picture on my cell phone yet, and it's just all gray and dark behind it. You know,
could you smell smoke?
Oh, yes. The smell was very, very much, and so that's why that this thing could just be over the hill, as intense as that smoke was. But
was
of course,
the wind blowing really
wind was blowing still 50, you know, every bit of 50 mile an hour, I would guess. In fact, that's I'm glad I stopped to help Eldora because she was having trouble managing in the wind and carrying a suitcase and got her away.
So when you got to Coldwater, was the Red Cross already setting up, or
no,
were they later?
They were later. We just kind of sat around in a really a surreal kind of atmosphere thinking, man, you see this on TV in California and the fires there, or even in Colorado when they have fires and everybody evacuates to some local spot. You never really think it would happen to you.
Yeah.
And immediately cell phones started going off and people were huddling around. I remember the Kellenbergers there, and at that point I think the word was they had lost their house and their family. We just, heart went out for them because that's what we had heard. A few minutes later we heard that that wasn't the case, so
right.
That was good. And we were getting reports about the walkers down in Inglewood and different people. We heard about the gardeners, Mark and Eva, situation, and just different reports started filtering in. And you know, it was, like I said, a surreal feeling, but it was comforting to be around people you knew, even though the anxiety was there and the fear of the unknown of what could happen the rest of the night. At that time, it was about, I would say, 6 o'clock. Neil Kay and Gail were sitting there because a lot of the protection folks had been evacuated also.
Right.
So we had a mix of Ashland and protection folks sitting there. You were not there.
We went to Buffalo.
You went to Buffalo with the South crowd, okay. Neil ushered, waved me over to his table, and he had his cell phone, and he had a picture that showed the path of the map, the path of the fire on a cell phone map. And he said, by that time the wind had switched out of the northwest, and he said this, he showed me around north of Ashland, and he evidently had heard it had gone through Bozidens, and he said it's heading towards Sitka. And I said, well, I may be looking to rent a home, Neil, or something. At that time, the scope and the breadth of it really took hold to me that this was just not a small little prairie fire. This was a massive crisis. And so we chatted with several people.
What'd you do for a meal?
They fed us. I understand that Dave's Pizza over there, I didn't know this till later, all of a sudden about 20 boxes of pizza showed up. And it wasn't very long after that the Red Cross showed up and they had sandwiches as well.
What'd you do with your dog?
Left Zoe out in the pickup and we'd go out and check on her. There were some people that brought their animals into the school, and then about the time they started setting up cots and people were to be bed down, they asked people to take their pets over to a kennel that was nearby. I think John Kellenberger made that announcement. Probably it was a good thing to do, to put their animals away. But we left ours in the pickup all night. So
by the time you got to Coldwater, had the wind shifted?
It had not. It shifted after we got there. In fact, when we got to Coldwater, it was still a very heavy smell of smoke traveling that same direction.
Was it getting
dark?
When
we first arrived. No, it was still daylight.
I'm going to
say it was still 4 o'clock. What did I say? About 4:15 when we arrived over there. And so still quite a bit of daylight left.
So you've seen a lot of smoke, though? A lot of ash coming in?
Not so much ash that I can recall. I remember the scent that was, you could smell it, and I thought, man, that's traveling all the way from home, you know.
Right.
And but in the west was a haze, not as bad as it was, of course, when we left the Sitka area.
Yeah.
But you know, we got along. I remember about 6:30 or 7, Jan Endicott came up to me. I was sitting there, standing there, and she said, Frank, we need you to lead us in prayer. And I kind of looked around for an area pastor. I said, well, we need to probably have a pastor do this. She said, no, we want you to do it.
Yeah.
So I stood up, got everybody's attention, and we prayed. Prayed for the firemen, prayed that God would you know, stop the winds, to help them fight the fire.
Right.
And just pray for protection in general for the whole area. And, of course, when I finished praying, I hadn't noticed that there was a Kate TV camera in my face, and so I guess it was recorded. My son in Pennsylvania saw it the next morning, so it went out on the air. I said, gee, if I'd known that, I'd beefed it up a little bit.
So what did you tell your family? Were they aware of what was going on?
Just after, I remember, I texted my daughter Emily in Hanston. Actually, she might have already known about it, because they had a fire on some of their property around Hanston on the Salmons property. So she was worried about that. We had texted her. We were, I think I group texted all of my kids that said, and Jennifer in New Jersey, Sue's daughter, that we were all heading to Coldwater. We were being evacuated because of prairie fire. Uh-huh. And then, of course, they all got excited and kept texting back and forth with us throughout the evening.
So did you spend the night on the cots?
We elected to go out into our vehicles and kind of recline the seats back, and the dog was out there, so it was not a restful night. About 10 o'clock, I got a text from Lawson Pike, who had decided to stay behind and go out and help Kirby, who is a neighbor just about 2 miles as the crow flies, a mile and a half south of me. And so they were kind of, he was helping Kerb do whatever he could. Kerb was on his tractor and disc, he said. And then I got to thinking, you know, really, I should have stayed home and done a little more preventive maintenance around our place as well. But I was there, and by that time they'd closed the road, so
couldn't
I was kind
back.
Of captive or stuck over there. But throughout the night, Lawson, about 12, I don't remember exactly the time, it was after midnight, called me, actually, and said, Frank, I've got good news and I've got bad news. And I thought, oh, bad news can't be any form of good in this kind of a situation. And he said, well, first he said, the bad news is it's gotten in your CRP. There's a section of CRP grass that was waist high. That was my biggest fear. If it got in that CRP, it could be possible. Lose the place. Says it's in that CRP and heading, he said, but the good news is the wind, of course, had switched out of the northwest at that point. This pasture is right east, the CRP is right east of our house. And he said, the good news is it blew it into that CRP about midway into the pasture, and it's heading away from your, the head fires are moving southeast away from your house. But then he paused. And he said, well, there might be some bad news. It's backfiring towards your house. And I said, well, I wish you hadn't told me the rest of the story.
It could have done without that.
And I said, so how far out is it? He said, oh, it's probably a good 300 yards out. Maybe not. He said, it's hard to tell. He said, he was going back and forth. And then shortly after that, I had a text from Jim Randall, who's Keith Randall's son, who had come down from Garden City, and I guess I've heard later that it was after the roads were closed, and he came in through the dirt county roads to get to Keith's place to help Keith out. And so Jim was also feeding me information about our place. In fact, he did text me a picture after the electricity had gone out, so everything was totally dark, so this would have been 1 or 2 in the morning. You can see the silhouette of the house with the fire in the background, the reddish-colored sky. And he said, well, it's still a mile north of you in CRP. That was in some Cousin Charlene's ground. But that the only thing that would stop it would be a dirt road between our place, and it was still going pretty hard by then. I think about that time he said the wind had died down just a little bit, but it was still burning pretty good. But he did about 3 o'clock, took a picture of the fire line just east of my house, and you could see, of course, it was burning against a pretty strong wind, so it wasn't moving very fast, but yet it was had a lot of fuel to feed it. So at about daylight, I decided, I told Sue, I'm the roads are still closed, I'm going to get home.
Were you pretty anxious
to get
there?
I was. I could not feel guilt, help but feel guilty all night that I didn't stay and defend the fort, as they say. So I told her at 6, I'm going to go even if I have to go the back ways, because at that time we knew the roads were probably still closed. So I went into the school and got what news I could, and got a little breakfast and used the facilities and was intent on getting on the road and getting over. And about that same time, the word came out that they'd opened the road. So I cruised home. I brought the dog and left Sue there. I said, give it some time and I'll call you and give you the all clear. Sped through, as I was going through protection, there happened to be a fire crew getting gas at the gas pumps there on the highway. And I pulled in there. They were from Hodgman. They were from Haskell County, Sublette area.
Right.
About 3 trucks, they were getting gas. And I remember stopping and I said, if you guys want to follow me and help save my house, I'll lead you.
Yes.
Thinking, yes. And they said, well, we have a call to go down South Protection to the Wolf Oak area, but give us your address and we'll put it on dispatch. And I said, I did, and I thought, well, probably nothing will ever come to that, because I knew crews were in high demand everywhere.
Yes.
So I gave it to them, and so I headed home, and...
Okay, you're going west on the highway?
Mm-hmm.
When's the first time you saw...
Yes. Just before the county line, I saw the Cone house on the south side of the road was burned. As I progressed further, I saw the damage. The Wilson's homesteads were burned to the ground.
So what are you thinking about your own place at this time when you're seeing
I'm
this?
Thinking, I had just gotten a report that, you know, that the fire line was about 100 yards from my front door. And so I felt like with the wind still, it's you know, we're opposite of the fuel. It was a backfire. I still felt I had a certain amount of time. As I turned the Sitka Hill and went south, and I realized, you know, everything is just black, just desolate. And my fears really worried about Eldora's house and Sitka and your brother's house.
Right.
Which I both all just barely escaped. And yeah. The fact that Eldora's, it came right up to the west side of the road and the highway stopped it, you know. Yeah. Fortunately for her.
Was the fire around the elevator burning at that time when you got home?
You know, all the fires were out right in that area. The big timber pile that Buddy had put in, that everybody had worried about how we're going to get rid of this for years, was gone.
Yeah.
And still smoking and a little flame there. But then I went on down to our corner there by Kenny Domi's, and his house was still there. I wondered about Bez, but I didn't go on down south to check on her place. But I felt like I need to get home. And so I got home, let the dog out, and hurried over to my tractor. It had been really cooled off that night, and my tractor was still hooked up to the drills from wheat drilling in the fall.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, you know, I need to get that unhooked and hooked up to my disc.
Right.
Because at that point, the flames were 100 yards from the house. And I thought, I could get out there easily with this disc and put a fire line and probably snuff it out. But it went a whole mile north and south there.
Not just a little bit. It's...
No, it was the whole CRP field was burning back to the west from north to south.
Uh-huh.
Barrett Brody was over there and Bill, and they'd been out with their spray trailer and trying to help in any regard, but they were having trouble getting it started.
Yeah.
Something had broken on it, or they thought originally the coolness had frozen something up. So he came over and helped me hook up to my disc, and fortunately the tractor started just before that, so that was a relief on a cold night. Just as I was heading over to the field and into the field, I look up and here comes a sheriff's car down my lane, and it was the Comanche County deputy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as it turned out, it was Greg Ellis, who's the Comanche County Fire Chief. And I stopped and got out, and I said, boy, am I glad to see you. Is the cavalry on the way, you know? And he said, look over there, and there were 2 Comanche County fire trucks coming, and they came and One right after another, got on the north end and just sprayed it out. I didn't even go out until, as they were regrouping after they headed out, they suggested I go out and plow a couple more breaks in the area that hadn't burned yet, which wasn't much, but just in case it had come back around. I have a wheat field just south of my house and a wheat field just kind of northwest of my house, but I had pasture west of the house that hadn't burned yet. And but from every direction you looked, of course, at that time, you could see smoke. And even north of my house was still, there was a fire in CRP north of my house, but the road seemed to be containing it at that time. So I called Sue and she came over, and about the time that she got there, I decided, you know, I think we're kind of, everything seems to be peaceful. I'll run into the bank and and see what I can do in there.
So the bank was open?
Yeah, we opened the bank at regular time.
Regular time?
There was a kind of a small staff. Kendall was involved with the, you know, the operation center up there as mayor, and Brandon was out doing his thing. Bill was on the fire truck. I think Kim, you know, we had basically a skeleton crew.
Right.
And just those in town that were able to make it back from Coldwater, or a couple of them like Lori Cryer never left the town, but you know, that's not all bad because she was able to document it with pictures in her great book. So I hadn't been there about an hour. Sue wasn't really excited about me coming to work because she felt like, you know, are we really out of danger just
yet? Too much
yet?
Smoke?
Oh, smoke everywhere you looked, in any direction. And I assured her that if I saw anything on my way to town, I'd turn around and come back. Well, there was a fire north of the road. That's the BW Road, just north, and it goes back around to what we call the Brody Corner there. But that road seemed to be containing any fire there.
Right.
Again, the wind had died down, probably 20 mile an hour at that point. It was still pretty good wind, but it wasn't like it had been. Oh, before that, I had helped. I noticed there was some cattle in a wheat pasture just south of the house, and Corey McCann, who worked for Bozidon, showed up with his four-wheeler, and I saw him out there trying to corral these, trying to get these cattle, and he'd already asked me if he could put them in our pens to locate them. And so I went out and tried to help him, and we eventually got about 25 head put in my corrals there. So I told Corey, I said, just leave them there. There was water and everything. They were safe. So I hadn't been in town, like I said, 30 minutes at the bank, and Sue calls, and she says, I think you better get home. There is a plume of smoke out in our west pasture, the pasture that hadn't burned yet. I said, Sue, I just went by there. It was all stopping on the north side. She said, I'm just telling you, the dog and I are leaving again. We're re-evacuating.
Yes.
And so when she said that, I decided, this sounds pretty serious. So I told the gals at the bank I'm heading home to see what this new excitement is all about. And I no sooner got south of the elevator and headed out on the Sitka Road, I could see this big plume of smoke, and I could locate it. It had really enlarged again. As I got closer, I could tell it was in my west pasture. What had happened, it had burned under the culvert, under the road, through a cement bridge sort of thing, which was full of thistles and dead weeds from previous years. And, of course, the wind it was just a funnel to put it over onto the other side. It reignited and spread again. So I quickly jumped back on the tractor. Sue had already left and went out into my west pasture around through the south gate, and proceeded to disc that line up. And it was the wind was kicking up again, but still kind of out of the northwest. And so I was kind of plowing it as far west as I could, but there was a fence that stopped me. I didn't have any wire cutters. And then there was a big ditch that was kind of hard, a big draw that hard. I decided, well, I'll plow and get it snuffed out the best I could. And I did that for about 15, 20 minutes. I thought I had it pretty well under control, except for the west end that I couldn't get to. About that time, I looked back to the east. And what had happened, it had burned down the bar ditch to a little 20-acre horse pasture just north of my house, and it had gotten in that north pasture and was starting to head south towards the house.
Yep.
So I folded the disc up, went back around, and I was able to extinguish that fire. Just about the time I felt like things were going well, I looked back over to the west pasture, and it had jumped my fire line and was raging quickly towards my corrals, the barn, and the house, right, just east of that. And I remember I stopped as I was folding up the plow, and I said a little prayer. I said, "God, this is bigger than I can handle. You know, what can help me out here?" And as that, at that moment, I looked up, and here came Ashland Fire, Rural Fire Truck 64 down the lane. I said, "Well, thank you. That was a quick answer to prayer, you know."
And that's a big truck.
And that was one of the big trucks. Jeremy Fast was driving, and Darren Osborne was on the back, as was Adam Elliott. And I drove the tractor. They pulled in my yard, and I said, you know, told them where the gate was, south of the house. I said, "Get over there." But this time it was about 100 yards from my corrals. And in that west pen were old dead fireweeds from the year before. I didn't have cattle in that particular pen. I thought, if that gets in there, the barn will be torched immediately, mm-hmm, and could very possibly set the house on fire. Just
was the wind blowing hard enough that it was hard to see through the smoke?
It was. And I didn't know how bad it was until it got on top of us. Well, as they were leaving to get over there from just north of my house, I think it was Darren said, "Get over there and start farming."
Right.
So I went behind them and started just doing a north and south break just on the west side of my pens,
uh-huh,
until I couldn't see where I was going, and I realized there were flames coming up under the tractor. And I decided at that point I needed to exit stage right, get out of this. And I moved on over. Plus, I knew there was a fire truck out there somewhere,
uh-huh,
and we're on a collision course any time. And then I saw a spray of water hit my windshield, and I thought, "Oh, they're here, they're close."
Yeah.
So I got over to the right fire, to the right fence line, and in a matter of about probably a half a minute, the smoke, the wind kind of blew the smoke away. It hit my fire line and a wheat pasture just south there, and we saved the place. And I remember the fire guys asked me if I wanted them to go out in the pasture and put it out, or then they pointed back toward the house. I knew that they had meant go check the house out, make sure there weren't any embers around the house garage or the barn, and they did. And I think they sprayed around some places.
So did they foam your house?
They didn't foam it.
They just made sure all the fire was out around it?
They just sprayed some areas out in the pens where there was some weeds and stuff, just for preventive.
So did that put out all the fire that was...
In the house, our place was out of immediate danger. It, uh-huh, proceeded to burn south across my fence line into the Brody pasture.
Mm-hmm.
That lays just south of Barrett Brody has that. And I remember they had to refuel, or a tanker or something came and filled them up. And about that time, I think I called Kirby, or Kirby got a call. I decided, you know, I've got a disc. I could go over there and try to work on that,
uh-huh,
because it could go on down towards Kirby's and
right
into that Bev York's pasture CRP that hadn't burned yet. So I went over and worked the fire line in the Brody pasture for about an hour or so, best what I could, because there's a couple rough canyons over there too. And I saw Bill and Barrett. They had they were over there with their spray truck and yeah, had it going again, and we're having to.
So is that the only fire truck you saw Tuesday morning?
That was it. And to go back to the night before, when Lawson called about it getting into that CRP, I said, "Well, Lawson, do you see any blinking lights out in there? Are there any fire crews in our area?" And he said, "Frank, they're all in town trying to save Ashland." And I said, "Well, that's where they need to be, you know." And so I think Bill Nyer told me later on that he had made a run out through our area middle of the night sometime, and he primarily to check on our places. I think I had texted Kendall knowing that he was busy, and I just said, yes or no, are there, what do you know about southeast of town? And he said, oh, I remember him saying, I don't think it's there yet, but it's real. I remember him saying, this is really bad, you know, so I knew I wasn't going to bother him again, you know, so.
So when you got the fire put out around your house and when you came back, mm-hmm. did you have any electricity?
No, electricity was off, you know. The only
and how long?
Hardship that I was trying to remember how long we were without. It seemed like it might have been through that night.
Thursday?
Through Tuesday. I think it came back on at our place on Wednesday, maybe. It wasn't more than a day. We had it worse during the ice storm in January, you know, like there a month or two before.
So where did Sue evacuate this time?
She went over I think she might have gone over towards Eldora's over on the highway. Uh-huh. And she, or either that, she said she could tell that there was a big plume of smoke and it kept getting bigger and bigger. And, of course, she was worried about me because she knew I was out on the tractor. And as soon as we kind of got the all clear, I texted her and I said, praise the Lord. You know, it was that close.
We're okay. So, did you take advantage of the meals in town Tuesday night?
You know, we didn't. I guess we didn't know that they were down at Christian Camp.
Time it was a school.
Oh, at the school.
Or at the Christian church. It wasn't at the
I guess we weren't aware of that. I don't even remember what we did for meals Tuesday night. We probably had stuff in the refrigerator that we worked on. I do remember we came to town to get some thermoses filled up at the church just for flushing and that sort of thing. Right. But, you know, even though Tuesday night we felt like everything around us had burned, which was evidenced when a couple days later my son Tyler came out from Wichita and had a drone and put it up in the air, and it was literally, we were on an island, and it was black all the way around us, sitting on about a 10-acre, 15-acre island that survived.
Yeah. So, how long did the smoke smell last?
Oh, mercy, Diana. I would say for a month after the fire, especially if I would walk out in the morning to come to work and the humidity was up or something, it was very evident. Of course, we didn't get any rains for 3 weeks there.
Yeah. So what did you lose in the fire?
You know, I lost all my grass with the exception of just that right around the house. I have leased pastures up north of the highway 160. There were three half sections up there. They were all burned, every pasture.
Lose all your fencing?
Primarily all of it. Then over here on the Sitka Road, the Chrisman place was burned with the exception of just a small acreage where a wheat field or two kind of buffered some pasture.
Did you have any cattle at the time?
Okay, this is kind of my story on cattle. I'm a stocker operator, and I normally start buying in late February or March.
Right.
And the morning of the fire, my cattle buyer that lives back in central Kansas said, I'm going over to Missouri. They've got pretty good runs today. Are you ready to get started? And I remember I told him, I said, you know, I've lost money on cattle the last 2 years. I'm really not liking the scenario right now. I said, tell you what, let me punch some numbers for a couple of days and I'll call you back in a couple of days is what I said.
Uh-huh.
Little did I know that, and he laughed and he said, well, there's always going to be cattle available. He said, let me know when you're ready. That was at about 10:30. At 11 o'clock, I realized there was a fire.
Mm-hmm.
At 12 o'clock, the fire whistle went off here. The next day, I realized that was an act of God because I wouldn't have had any place to go with the cattle anyway.
Right.
Totally a God thing. And I called, actually Gary is his name, called me and he said, heard you had some tough luck out there. And said, I suppose you don't need cattle. I said, Gary, I don't have a place to put them unless I put them in the feedlot. And that wasn't my game just then. So, yeah, I kind of lucked out in that department. So as a result of that, I didn't buy cattle all last year.
Yeah. So did you have a lot of things that you needed to take care of at home before you went back to work, or did you end up going back to work?
I did not the rest of the day. I decided that...
Or that week?
I was back the next morning.
On Wednesday?
on Wednesday. We had, things had pretty well died down as far as any smoke or flames around our place. Nothing left to burn, actually. I think they were still fighting it down on the river south of us. You could see smoke, and of course it moved east down over on Snake Creek and in that area. But
so what's your most vivid memory of the fire?
I would imagine, if you had to narrow it down, it was plowing out west of my barn, and all of a sudden I realized I was engulfed in smoke and flames coming up around the tractor. That was a moment of decision that I thought, I really don't want to go out this way. And that was very impactful. My wife calls me a hero. I call myself stupid. But you do what you do in those things.
It's perception there, I guess.
Yeah, well, the house has been in our family for, like I said, 100 years. I didn't want it to go in flames. And that's why I felt so guilty the night before, that I was there in cold water, not able to do anything to save it, you know. So
you've been around this country your whole life, and you have seen wildfires before.
Yeah.
And prairie fires, or just grass fires.
Yeah, and had some ourselves, yeah.
And any comparison?
Nothing. Diana, this was beyond belief.
Did your experiences with earlier wildfires, when this fire started, make you think that, oh, this is no big deal? Or
I don't know that I
different?
Ever had that thought, Diana, because that wind was just cranked up so high Monday. I immediately thought this could be, I think I said this earlier, this could be a really big deal. And lining it up from south of Inglewood towards Ashland, yeah, there's some wheat fields that might break it, but there's a lot of grass in between there too. And I had no idea at the time that there were these two fires up south of Mineola, or in the north of Bos Idens and up in there that had also sparked. And of course, that probably itself did more, you know, area-wide damage. Not, I realize the other house cost people their homes. But
so, has your family ever lost a lot of grass in a fire?
I remember a fire was started here east of town on the south. It was a CRP burn one day that got away from the fire department. Came through the Chrisman place and put me out of business there for a year, but I was able to find more grass that year. That one was scary because I just turned out a bunch of steers that I'd just been starting their nice set of Montana steers, and I, one time I got over that fire, they were all backed up in a corner.
Yeah.
And I was able to cut the wire and get them out on a wheat field, and that would have been, you know, a little barbecue had that not happened.
Yeah.
But because of that memory in my mind, what the ranchers that lost cattle in this deal was so realistic, even though I didn't lose anything myself, you know. So
who were some of the people or agencies that proved most helpful, either during the fire or after the fire?
Well, you know, people are endless. I don't know. I wouldn't know where to start. Everybody was so, the outpouring was so evident immediately with a program up at the school gym with different agencies that had set up. I think it was that same week, Thursday or Friday that week, maybe. FSA, I'm not sure who all was involved with the meeting at the high school that kind of filled the gym up with several speakers on fence recovery, different things that, cow-calf recovery, animal recovery that was available. You know, the individuals, again, I just can point to the fire department. I'll always remember when I gave Jeremy a hug. And I really wasn't losing a house, but it was close.
Yep, very close. So talk about some of your customers. How difficult was that to handle? Did you have any that lost land or cattle or anything? Houses?
Yes, yeah. Numerous ones
Did you have to contact them?
Actually, we made it a point to try to call everybody that we knew was or could have been impacted to see what we as a bank could do to help out. And occasionally you would hear of a story that you hadn't heard before, and oh gosh, I need to call them. But we made it kind of a team effort to get in touch with our people within the next week at the latest. You know.
Did you have lots of people coming through the bank during the time after the fire? Like,
oh, I remember that next day. It was, I think Ashland still was kind of a ghost town anyway, mm-hmm. on Tuesday.
Right.
As the day we had the skeleton crew there. And even Wednesday it was pretty slow. But I think, you know, things kind of came back to some sort of normality towards the end of the week and into the next week. You know,
so. Did you have a lot of landlords coming back to check out their land?
Yes,
afterwards?
We did. I had an aunt from Wichita that came out who had property just east of my place. I know of some customers that, you know, from other areas that didn't really, might have had an account with us, but had certainly land and fences that needed to be repaired. So it impacted a lot of people that didn't necessarily even live here, you know, owners primarily. Yeah, it was probably the biggest thing I've been through. I would call it our Greensburg tornado, even though we didn't have loss of life. And that was really, as we've all said, we're very lucky we didn't have a lot of funerals to go to that next week.
Yeah. So did you volunteer, like up at the school or at the camp with meals?
I did, probably into that next week when I realized what the Christian church folks were doing. And
what kind of things did you do?
I didn't do a lot. showed up in the evenings and helped serve there just two or three nights. My wife kicked in and she helped. Actually got a crew to give some of the gals that had been doing that, Mel Hank and some of her crew, some relief a couple different days. And you know, it was good to, because about that time is when the big volunteer crews were rolling in, and there was a lot of
so did you get to
feed.
Talk to them, the volunteers that came?
Oh, yes, I did. In fact, I took advantage of two or three different crews on different times that came out to tear out fence, and the most memorable was the busload of 4-H kids from Michigan, and this was about 3 weeks, maybe about a month after when they showed up, but they all stayed at the camp, and your boss, Holly, kind of had put me on the list, and I said, yeah, I've got plenty of fence to tear out, you know. I took them over south of Sitka. When I went down to meet them, it's kind of funny, my name Y probably being, starting with Y, was probably at the bottom of the list, and so I got the last three standing because people had already come and got their group and taken off, and they were three girls. One from who was, I think, in junior high. Two of them were sisters, and they were all good friends. They wanted to stay together as a group.
Right.
The oldest one went to Michigan State. Oh gosh, I'm not getting much done. But their leader kind of winked at me and said, "Don't worry, Frank. You've got the best workers on the bus." And later on that day, they about worked me into the ground. They were taking wire down. I was rolling it up the old-fashioned way. It was a warm day that Saturday, I remember. And my tongue was hanging out later that evening. We asked them if they wanted to stay with us rather than come back into the camp, and they were very grateful that they got our facilities rather than... Not that things are... I didn't mean to sound that way, but they didn't have to sleep in a dorm. You know, they had their own bedroom that way, too.
Yeah. So. That's cool. So they work a couple of days for you? Or?
Actually, they worked... We asked if they wanted to go to church with us that next on Sunday morning, and they were all good Christian gals, and they came to church. And as soon as that was over, they said, "Well, we'll go home and change back into our work clothes." And they had their sack lunches already, so off we went, and we worked till about 6 o'clock. We had to have them back in because their bus was going to leave and drive all night back to the thumb of Michigan.
Wow.
Sandusky, or I believe was the name of the town. But they were all 4-H girls, and they knew how to work.
Yeah. And so have you kept in contact with them?
Yes, we have. You know, they kind of took a liking to us, and we've kind of felt like they were our own kids.
Yeah.
I went down to see him often. It was kind of like seeing my kids go off to college for the first time. Yeah. And the Life of Girls, and we email back and forth and Facebook, and they keep us posted.
So did you have some other volunteers come help?
Yes, I had a group out from around just east of between Lawrence and four guys that just decided to come out and help.
Uh-huh.
That very first week, Trent Noel was also helping Holly, and he asked if I... He said he had a crew coming down from northern Kansas. I didn't think anything about it. He didn't have names, but... they showed up the next morning, and it happened to be Leanne Pike's brother, Daryl, I believe it was, and he had two big, strong guys, and I took them up north of the highway, and they had a half mile torn out and put back in 2 days. These guys knew how to work.
Yeah.
Plus, they brought, this is on a cousin's pasture, but they brought a whole cradle load of fencing material that had been donated by the co-op up there. So,
is this a pretty dirty job, tearing out the fence? Was
there
a lot of
ash or
stuff?
At that point, it was before the rain. I think it was before our first rain. So every time the wind blew, it was a dirty 30s all over again. And
did it get better after the rain?
It did. It kind of settled everything down. And of course, you know, just... even that first week, you could see green sprouts starting to come in certain areas.
So has your grass pretty much come back? Or?
You know, it has. If you, you know, even in July, August, you could be driving around and it just looked like a golf course, you know. Mm-hmm. A little later on, you could see a lot of the wheat growth. And actually, if you walked out, you could see it really wasn't a lot of grass. We were seeing it was a lot of weeds, ragweed and that sort of thing. But, you know, I was up in my pastures here a couple of weeks ago and checking on some fence that still needs to be repaired. And the buffalo grass, I think, if this thing could just turn around and start raining,
uh-huh.
I think I could start buying cattle. And maybe I wouldn't run the numbers I normally run, just cut the stocking rate back a bit. And but gosh, if it doesn't rain, I don't think it's good for the pastures if there's nothing green for them to eat, but, you know, we're trying to stay optimistic there.
So did you take advantage of the funds that were provided by the Community Foundation and the KLA?
I did. I also applied through the FSA for my landlords and myself, and I probably had a little over 4 miles of my own personal fence that was bad enough to be torn out and repaired. And I applied for the other funds that were available. The one out of Amarillo, I didn't receive anything, but I know that they were very helpful, the Workers Cowboys Association, Working Ranch Cowboys. But I know there's another application going around now that this Mr. Buffett, I think, donated some to that fund. So, and that's for fencing material only.
Right.
And I filled that out to offset... no more, and on every application I told them that I didn't want to double dip, but I would apply for an amount that would equate to the 25% that the government isn't going to pay us. So, it's been wonderful to get new fence. This isn't the way we really want it, but through government assistance and the volunteer help, as well as these wonderful people that donated to the Ashland Foundation.
Totally. The people that came and volunteered or donated.
Yeah.
Did you see the big trucks come through with the hay?
Absolutely. One Saturday was my morning at the bank, and I think that was the morning that a convoy of 25 to 30 trucks came in loaded with hay. And I had my cell phone, and I filmed them, you know, taped them.
Yeah.
Just gave them a thumbs up as they passed by, and just... Going to Buckland one day, I met a convoy, you know, and I just stuck my hand out the window with a thumbs up and blinked my lights at them. And
did you get to visit with any of the firefighter strike teams that came? Did you see them in action?
I didn't see them in action. They were, you know, they showed up after it was pretty much done around town here, I think.
Tuesday.
Late Tuesday, was it not?
Yes.
And I think they probably gave our guys some relief, so it wasn't certainly a bad deal, and went down on the river and kind of assisted with that. Yeah. Heard stories from Bill Nyer that said these guys are probably more trained for mountain firefighting and that sort of thing, rather than out in the prairie. But, you know, good for them that they showed up. I did see a truck up at the high school parking lot that said Carbondale, Colorado Firefighting Unit. Mm-hmm. My sister lives in Carbondale, so I took a picture of their door and texted it to her.
Uh-huh.
And a week or two later, she was so enthralled that people, that's clear out on the west slope of Colorado, south of Glenwood Springs, and she was so proud that her community was involved, she said, I'm going to bake a pan of brownies and take it over to the firehouse, and just said, I'm from Ashland.
Can you perceive of anything positive that came from the fire?
Oh, I think primarily positive is just faith in mankind and what was displayed to our whole community and the whole county and the whole area into Oklahoma, and was the sharing and the outpouring of love and generosity, caring. Especially this time in our country where there's so much division, it's great to see people come together. Yeah.
So what did you think of our community's response to all the volunteers and donations?
Oh, that was amazing. The way the school opened up the doors and allowed them to stay up there and fed them, Mr. Wettig and the kids. And that was the week that we were in the state championship, state tournament. To understand that the boys even sacrificed a couple nights practice to put those guys up when their season was on the line, that was huge. Yeah.
So, as a banker, have you noticed a physical or financial effect of the fire to the community? And what about the emotional toll of the fire?
You know, the physical first, obviously we bounced back. It certainly looked pretty disastrous there for a month or two, maybe further. The pastures may still not be quite back where they are. Certainly people with lost homes and belongings, you can't replace that. But the human element, the emotional element is tough, I think. But our people are resilient and strong. I think I heard of a couple instances where people thought that so-and-so was really getting down over it, but seemed to be back to normal. You asked
financial. Financial
is, I'm keenly aware of the fact that thanks to the aid of the FSA and the foundation, and so these guys that lost the big cow numbers may not ever get that loss back, but they're all good operators, and they have the ability, I think, to bounce back with a few years of good cattle prices.
So, like with the drought and the way the wheat crop's looking, how's that going to
affect?
Yeah,
we don't need more bad luck after what we had last year. Again, I think our people, we had some years with good cattle prices. Our people built some pretty good equity in their lines to the point where I don't think there's anybody that's stressed to the point of real concern.
Yeah.
And fortunately, we all feel as bankers that we were really blessed to have survived such huge catastrophe that with loss into the millions that we aren't going to be okay. You know?
Yeah.
It's just amazing, really.
Yeah. Really.
God's looking out for us.
So what can you do or have you done to prepare for a future fire or some other emergency like this personally?
Well, my tractor at home is still hooked onto my drill, and I think when I get home tonight, I'm going to hook it up to the disc.
Yeah.
or at least in the next couple of days. I thought about that the other day. I know this whole drought right now is, our scenario was set up just like a year ago. And who's to say in March or even February this month something bad could happen again? But I think it's taught us a lot of lessons too, not only in with, you know, I'm sure the fire department's learned a lot of things. Local ranchers have probably learned a lot of things. But you get a 60-mile-an-hour, a fire driven by a 60-mile-an-hour wind, there's not a lot a person can do if you're in the direct path.
So you said you had a chance to evacuate some stuff from your house, mm-hmm. or pick up some stuff. Mm-hmm. Was there things when you got home that you saw that you said, oh, we should have taken that?
Oh, yeah. You always have second thoughts of things. But in the heat of the moment, pardon the pun, we took the things that we felt were nearest and dearest. And
yeah.
You're not going to be able to save everything, you know.
That is true. So what can the community do, or have we done to prepare for another emergency?
You know, I would imagine, I don't know. I'm sure Millie Fudge's emergency team has learned a lot from this. The fire department, as I said earlier, community as a whole. I think that everybody probably realizes if we have another evacuation, what they would do different. Some that stayed behind that probably didn't rest very good that night might know that next time I'm leaving. Uh-huh. Some that left might say, no, that I could have stayed behind. You don't know how the community as a whole is going to do, but I think everybody learned. You learn from experience.
Yeah.
Sometimes you learn by your mistakes, and that's the way we all try to get better.
Yeah, it is. So do you have any other thoughts about this experience that you'd like to share, or anything that you think you left out?
You know, I probably rambled a whole lot more than I had intended to when I sat down here. You kind of get rambling. You get telling the story and things come back to you, especially, here 10 months later. Mm-hmm. You know, anything else I guess that I would say is thanks to you, Diana, and Kara, and everybody that's involved, Karen, I guess, in this endeavor of documenting this. And I didn't think my story was exciting enough to actually come and visit with, and probably it doesn't compare to a lot of the stories that you've recorded. People in much more harrowing situations and lost their homes and that sort of thing. But my wife kept prodding me. She said, well, everybody's got a story to tell.
That's right.
And thank you for this opportunity. I know that out at Gardner's, the night before the Gardner's sale, a lady that does their work for them came and tapped me, their media work.
Right.
And she had a camera set up upstairs at their marketing center and came and tapped me on the shoulder and Sue and said, come up after the dinner and I want to interview you because we just want to do a thank you from various people in the community. And I said, Sue didn't want to do it, but actually she did better than I did. But we went up and just expressed our thanks to the countless people that we don't know that gave of their time and effort and hay and labor and fence materials and that sort of thing. And, you know, just the caring, the outpouring, as I said, that showed up. That's my biggest takeaway from this is thank you to the many people that cared at the time and are still caring, you know.
It's true. So thank you for spending the time to tell your story. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Diana. It was fun.
Good.